What's up, guys? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, April 6th, 2018. I'm Tim Geddes, and my sneezy friend over here is Jared Petty.
Off to the races, dokie dokie.
Audio Quit Live in 3, 2, 1, sneeze.
Yeah, I was trying to get out the warning, but I couldn't even speak
because the sneeze was stuck in my throat. It is what it is. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every day.
Every day.
Right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we come to you with all of the video game news that you need to know. You can watch it live with us on Twitch, or you can watch the video when it goes up as a VOD on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, or as a podcast on all the podcast services everywhere. That's a challenge. If there's a podcast service that we're not on, let me know. Tweet at me, at Tim Geddes, because I want to get on there.
You need to be careful about that. That could end badly.
I mean, hopefully it ends with us getting on more podcasts.
Do you really know how many podcast services there are? I mean,
no, but
you know,
I know there's a lot of, like, once you're in one of them, they kind of, a lot of the other ones just kind of
do that aggregation.
Aggregate.
Got to aggregate out there.
I guess let me know about that. man, it's Friday and it feels like it.
It feels
like a Saturday. Me and Nick were talking about this. It's like, it's been one of those weeks where we're sitting here working, but it's like, it feels like we're not supposed to be working.
Maybe it's the rain. Do you think that's it? Because it didn't rain here much.
I don't know.
The light's a little weird
just,
today.
It's just been... and everything going on, but today is a good day of news. So we got some fun stuff going on here.
Are you ready to be the ringmaster of today's Jackass Circus?
I don't think I am, but you know what I mean. I'll try my best for you guys out there.
I think you can handle
a little bit of housekeeping. Kinda Funny prom tickets are on sale now. Kindoffunny.com/tickets. And then another reminder that me, Greg, and Pixel Brave himself will be in Mizzou next week doing some meet and greets, doing some fun stuff. We're doing a meet and greet Wednesday, April 11th at CJ's Hot Wings at 6:30 p.m. But I think it's 6:30 p.m. Central Time.
Oh, Central Time.
So things are getting kind of icky.
What's wrong with Central Time?
Me and Kev don't fuck with it, man.
What?
Ew.
Oh, I don't know about this. This is something I don't know about at all.
Oh, just, shit, hippie.
And all we're right. Sponsored by patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, but we'll get to that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report.
It's
time for some news.
That's not even what he says.
What?
Doesn't he say singular possession?
No. That was like a piece I love you.
Time for
dude.
Some news?
Get with the new show.
But I think he says something new.
Bro, no, he says time for some news.
He always says time for some news. That doesn't change.
Have you ever heard the show? Have you ever been a part of the show?
I try not to listen as much.
Yeah. Time for some
news.
We have
four stories today.
Thank you.
What is going on? It's the sneeze. The sneeze broke everything. I talked over you there. I feel so rude.
Oh, dude. More stories. Baker's Dozen. We're in this, bitch.
Right.
Doing it? Story number one comes from Kotaku. Splinter Cell, Ghost Recon, crossover.
So what?
Let's get into this. Michael Ironside reprises his role as Splinter Cell's Sam Fisher in Ghost Recon Wildlands. Fisher will be part of the game's next special operation, which is part of Wildlands' second year of DLC. Earlier this week, Ubisoft indicated that the first special operation would launch on Tuesday, April 10th, and consist of a new sabotage PvP mode and a campaign mission and challenge with exclusive rewards. The company is teasing a fuller reveal of the Fisher content for Monday, April 9th. Wildlands has had more radical crossovers, namely involving the Predator. The crossover of one Tom Clancy series into another here is nevertheless a surprise. After years of sequels, Ubisoft hasn't put out a new Splinter Cell since 2013, Whoa. Though a new one has been rumored to be in development. Also surprising is the return of Ironside, who Ubisoft did not use in the most recent Splinter Cell game, recasting the role with another actor. So I think that was like the biggest... like, oh, shit thing. Is like, oh, man, they're going back to classic Sam Fisher.
Going back to, now, is the question we have to ask here is Kiefer Sutherland going to be in a hospital bed next to him at the beginning of the game, and then everything gets a little weird?
I hope not.
All right. I wonder about that.
I hope not.
I always get
exciting
Michael,
news.
It is exciting. I always get Michael Ironside and Jeremy Irons conflated in my head. I don't know
why.
Michael Ironside is, well, no, they're very different looking people, but
yeah.
Michael Ironside is the Starship Trooper guy, right?
Like, I'm out of this.
Is that him?
Know. To me, Kevin? He's Sam Fisher. I just know him as the voice of Sam Fisher.
All right. So
Jeremy Irons is Alfred in the hit movie Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
That's a terrible motion picture.
It is. It is. He was great in it, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's a good actor.
So this is exciting. There was a trailer released. You know, it's like a lot of fun kind of build up of like, I'm going to answer the call. We got this. I know some boys. Mm-hmm. And then you see the noise. And it's like, let's fucking go. A little bit of a weird thing, though, where I'm surprised that they wasted this hype moment on a Ghost Recon DLC event. Like, they can still do it at E3 and just have the fucking the sound and the color, the green, and people will know Splinter Cell's back. This is hype. But like, it feels kind of like blowing your load a little early.
Well, I don't know if you're doing it early. I think what's happening right now maybe is that they already are beginning to solidify what they're going to want in their E3 presentation. That's my guess, is that they're starting to block out the time and be like, okay, we know about what we want to hit here, and maybe if they do this, they know people are going to be anxious for a trailer. And there's going to be articles written like, when will we see the next Splinter Cell trailer? Or, you know, things like that. But also, right now, today, there's news today, plenty to talk about, but it's kind of a quiet, the last couple of days have been kind of quiet. And they got this nice little window where they got
Spyro
to themselves.
Spyro was announced yesterday, so I don't know how quiet things have been. It's been pretty fucking loud over here, you know what I mean, Kev?
I don't think that the Spyro and the Splinter Cell are quite existing in the same space in gaming.
True.
I mean, we're all interested. I'm interested in both, certainly.
Splinter Cell, Spyro, PlayStation 1?
Nah.
Not right at all.
What is Spyro?
I was thinking another game.
Siphon Filter? You were thinking.
Wait, why are you talking about Siphon Filter? Oh my gosh, we can go off on that for a while. No, but I'm a little like Spyro Advisor. With a little like.
Oh, I'm in.
That'd be amazing. You pull him down?
This is exciting stuff. And I'm not a big Recon Ghost Recon guy. I'm also not a big Splinter Cell guy. But there's people out there. Roger Percorni, a friend of mine and friend of yours out there. He is a big fan, and he seems excited about all this. So.
I'm glad to see him coming back. I think that's neat. I mean, I have no idea why he wasn't in the last game. It could have been contract stuff. He may have been busy with something else. Who knows?
I'm happy that even Ubisoft is like, all right, this is something we need to fix.
Yeah, you just bring it back. That's it.
We'll do it right.
We get people. So, yay. All right. Good game's coming. Gotta love that.
Keep it on the Ubisoft news. This comes from IGN. Ubisoft opens another new studio.
Ubiquitous indeed.
In addition to Ubisoft Odessa and Ubisoft Mumbai, Ubisoft has opened its third new studio in the past few weeks.
Ubisoft Mars.
Oh my God, it's happening eventually. The new studio, Ubisoft Winnipeg, will be headed up by Far Cry 5 producer Daryl Long. Quote, there's a very specific and complementary mandate for the studio, which is that we want to contribute to the development of the big AAA brands like Assassin's Creed, Far Cry, and Watch Dogs, specifically in the area of building open worlds, Long said. Ubisoft is planning to have a team of 100 at the freshly minted Canadian studio within the next 5 years. Ubisoft Winnipeg will be a studio focused on making Ubisoft's open world games better. Our goal in Winnipeg is to do the research and development on the processes, the pipeline, and the tools to put the investment into making them as efficient as possible and ultimately increase the quality of the open worlds we're producing for our games. So we'll be working hand in hand with the other Canadian studios to develop their AAA brands and specifically their open worlds. In March, Ubisoft opened studios in Mumbai, India, and Odessa and Ukraine. Odessa, Ukraine. Odessa's in Ukraine, yeah. In addition, the publisher purchased Brawlhalla developer Blue Mammoth Games. This expansion is insane.
It takes approximately 6 trillion people to make a AAA video game. It really does. It takes an enormous number of human beings. And as we move into the 4K era, art assets become ever more difficult to make, and it becomes ever more complicated to make, especially something like an open world game, because there's just so many moving parts that have to be crafted to such a sheen and interact in very complex ways. Ubisoft appears to be doubling down on the, no, seriously, we're in this AAA games business and we are here to stay and we are gearing up for the next generation right now. We understand what's going to be required of it and we're just going to keep making sure we have the human resources in place to produce these games at a pace that will allow us to make a steady profit so our shareholders and investors can be satisfied with what they've put into it. And I think this is smart. I mean, it seems like overexpansion, but I don't, or it seems maybe at a cursory look like overexpansion, but I don't think it is. I think these locations and these studios are all being carefully calculated for specific purposes on a long-term plan inside the company. I think that this is, it might appear to be overly ambitious. I disagree. I actually think this is a conservative, smart business move.
I agree with you. Bird from the Peg writes in and says, good morning, Tim and Jared. Today, I woke up to the news of Ubisoft opening a new studio in my beloved city of Winnipeg. That's why his name's Bird from the Peg. I like that.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. I'm very, very excited for this move. Winnipeg is a smaller city that often goes overlooked, especially when it comes to the video games industry. I hope that Ubisoft's move to Winnipeg will open the eyes of other companies and let them see how great this city can and will be. With Ubisoft putting $35 million into the province, this can really help Winnipeg grow and become the city I know all of us here want. Love everything you guys do. Love the bird.
I've always wanted to live in Canada. Bird, if you can get me into Winnipeg, I'm there, man.
Then we'll be good. Yep. I just thought this was a fun question to write in, because I remember growing up in San Francisco, and whenever we would cross the Bay Bridge, I'd see the Sega building. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was so cool to see the Sega logo on a building. And it's just, there's something about that where it's like, oh man, like, the games are made there. And they totally weren't. Like the Sega.
But it felt that way.
It did. It felt like, this is the headquarters, even though it wasn't.
Now, the Zynga building.
That's very sad. Very true. But yeah, so it's cool for our friend the bird over here to be excited about Ubisoft expanding over there and into his hometown. And I think that's really, really cool. They released a hype trailer to promote this new studio. And it was so crazy to me to see all the franchises that Ubisoft works on, mm-hmm. and how many studios they have. I wasn't aware that they have like 16 studios around the world.
Yeah, they're really I think that's a realistic move. I mean, I'm not joking about the 100 bajillion people it takes to make one of these things. And they know that if they want to get an AC game out even every couple of years, if they want to get a Watch Dogs game out, if they want to expand into games as a service, that's something that I think people are really getting their heads around now inside the AAA industry. If you're going to make games as a service, the problem with them is you have to keep making them. The old development cycle was you work really hard, you crunch at the end, game's over, everybody rests, you start the new game. If you want games as a service, you have to have teams constantly working on video games that before would have been just dead projects. That means you need a lot more people working AAA all the time if you're both going to maintain those games and continue to make new ones. Ubisoft, I believe, is gearing up to make sure they have the backbone to make that happen on a consistent, reliable, predictable basis.
Totally. And I think it does make a lot of sense for them to do that. It's really crazy to look at Ubisoft and where they're at now, where back in the day, you know, there was the big three, Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo. I mean, at one point, Sega, mm-hmm. before Xbox. And when you look at the third parties, there's Activision, there's EA. Mm-hmm. I always kind of related Ubisoft more out to like the Square Enixes of the world, where mm-hmm. it's just like, yeah, they're a third party, but they're not this like superpower. But now you look at them and Ubisoft is as big as EA and Activision.
Oh, like, Ubisoft is a powerhouse.
It is the third pillar over there.
Yeah.
And the amount of franchises they have, it's kind of mind-blowing.
The award-winning Steep alone.
Oh, yeah. Steep alone.
Yeah, but right there.
All the AAA games they were talking about, like that they had an impressive library. And now their E3 conference every year, it's packed with either new announcements or updates to games. And there's a reliability that we know the things we're going
to
see.
Yeah, obviously Nintendo near and dear to my heart. Ubisoft, in a lot of ways, is my favorite AAA developer because they're absolutely insane and do things that they try stuff. They try stuff more than anybody but Nintendo does. And I like that about them a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we have them. They keep the industry honest in a way. Mm-hmm. And they bring a different sensibility. And the fact that they're such an international company, I think, really helps them try new ideas. Look at it, because the plain fact of the matter is, different countries, different parts of the world give you different sets of presuppositions. And that leads to different kinds of art. And I love that. And I think Ubisoft has their fingers in that a little more than some other companies.
Yeah. Well, speaking of things you love, Jared, our next story is right for you. This comes from Nintendo Everything. SNK 40th Anniversary Collection announced. SNK and NIS America announced SNK 40th Anniversary Collection at PAX East 2018 today. Switch was confirmed as one of the package's platforms, and as it turns out, will actually be the only system it will be appearing on. That's a weird way to say that. NIS America has passed along the official announcement for SNK 40th Anniversary Collection, confirming that it will be exclusive to Switch. This collection will feature the following titles and more to be announced.
That's right. Exciting. And they've got a whole list here. Isn't that exciting?
Alpha Mission, Athena, Crystalis.
Woohoo!
Akira Warriors. Akira Warriors 2.
No, Ikari, my friend.
Ikari Warriors. Ikari Warriors 2, Victory Road. Ikari Warriors 3, The Rescue. Guerrilla War.
Underrated.
POW. Prehistoric Isle. Psycho Soldier, Street Smart, TNK 3, Vanguard, and more.
And more, that's right. And more.
I have played a total of zero of these games.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding. Mm. Oh, wow. Okay, well, we can fix some of that. Some of these are pretty fun arcade games. You ever played Ikari Warriors?
No.
Wow. I'm Chuck. That was one of the first arcade cabinets I ever owned. Hmm. I actually sold it to a bunch of kids in a dorm eventually. But Ikari Warriors.
Rascally kids.
All right, so 40th anniversary collection of SNK. These are mostly going to be SNK's earlier games. SNK, which is an acronym that translates to the New Japan Project, is one of the more venerable Japanese game developers. They've been around a long time. They're the people that made the Neo Geo. You remember those Neo Geo mm-hmm. cabinets? But these games are from their earlier history. Now, this is not like groundbreaking news, but two really cool things here. First, several of these games are excellent. Crystalis in particular, like if you love Zelda, is absolutely to this day worth your time.
Hmm.
It's like a apocalyptic Zelda. It's really cool. Yeah, it's a really groovy game. Some of these are fun shooters. Ikari Warriors really is pretty groovy.
I just looked up Ikari Warriors, a screenshot of it. I've definitely played that at a round table once or twice. Yep. The game style and visual look, there was a Western.
Yeah, well, wait. What are you talking about? For Ikari Warriors? Or?
There's a game that looks like Ikari Warriors that was a Western game.
You think about Gunsmoke?
Yes, okay. That's what it was. Yeah, I'm more familiar with Gunsmoke. Is that also SNK?
I don't know if SNK did Gunsmoke or not. I don't probably. They made a lot of that kind of top-down shooter. Because in addition to that, Guerrilla War is the same kind of game. It's like that. POW is a good side-scroller, Double Dragon type game. Psycho Soldier, notable for being one of the earliest examples of digitized speech. In a song, like
fine,
the Psycho
okay.
Soldier song, you've got a digitized like recording, then digitized and sung back. It's really, really cool. The Psycho Soldier song is actually pretty neat. Anyway, the main thing about this, Virtual Console going away for now, mm-hmm. and suddenly this big Switch collection of 80s arcade and console games. And by the way, most of these are available in their console and arcade versions, which are often quite different, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that is cool.
And I like that a lot. And I'm really excited to see what else could come. They have some other great stuff in that library. But I'm really wondering what's going to happen, Tim. And I want to ask you about this.
Mm-hmm.
What's coming with Virtual Console? Because we've got NES and SNES Mini now.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Virtual Console and old Wii shut down. Virtual Console on Wii U kind of de-emphasized. That platform is effectively dead. 3DS Virtual Console still there, but not a huge deal. Compilations coming out now like this for the Switch that before
Street
might have been
Fighter,
targeted.
Mega Man X.
Yeah, targeted at something like VC. Now, there were compilations on Wii. There was that excellent Data East collection, for example. Mm. So it's not
Metal
like
Slug
ever happened.
Anthology.
Let me see Metal Slug. We're going to get back to SNK with a question later on, I think, in the show. Somebody
yes,
else brought
are.
Up an SNK
yes.
question. But what do you think? Where's this going?
So I've talked about this a lot, so sorry to bore people, but I truly believe, and at this point, maybe I'm just doing the thing that a lot of people did with Star Wars Episode 8 and just creating something I want in my head and then being really disappointed when I don't get it. But Virtual Console, I believe that Nintendo's online service is going to be a Netflix-style Virtual Console.
Mm-hmm.
And how it's exactly implemented, I'm not sure. I don't know if all games will be available always or mm-hmm. if it will be like some weird timed thing and you kind of borrow the games as you play them.
Second Channel 2.0.
Kind of, yeah, but I think with the ecosystem we have now and the way that video games work, and especially the Switch being this hybrid system, I think that the Virtual Console that way could work. And I feel like with Nintendo's online services, with the games that they have, Nintendo's like online is when it comes to video games, it's for the MMORPGs, first person shooters, games as a service, Division, Destiny, Halo, Counter-Strike, Call of Duty. We're not going to get those games on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do, they're not going to be like the competitive online scene. I don't think we'll ever be this like where people want to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like people want to go to Xbox or they want to go to PlayStation and they have, or PC even, and they have that. Nintendo has Nintendo games, Nintendo multiplayer games. Splatoon, huge hit, especially in Japan, huge. Smash Bros., huge everywhere. Mario Kart, huge. Those games online, as long as online works, I think people are going to be okay. That's not what people are going to pay for an online subscription service for.
Okay.
And I think that Nintendo understands that. And there might be rare exceptions at points where there are games that... I can see Final Fantasy 14 being ported over to the Switch and being a hit. I can see a Monster Hunter being a big hit. But I think Nintendo's online service is going to be their answer to Virtual Console. And that's going to be what entices people to...
So Nintendo obviously has its incredible first party library to fall back on there right away. These are third party games, some of which are arcade, some of which were NES games. Mm-hmm. When it comes to third party stuff, one of the problems Virtual Console seemed to eventually have run into was, hey, these are some more niche titles. They were NES games, they were Master System games, they're historically interesting, some of them are very good. But by the way, every time we want to put one of these on here, we got to go through the Nintendo pipeline, we got to get through the gatekeeper, and we've got to pay the substantial ESRB rating fee to get every one of these up on the service. Do you think in a Netflix-like model that not insignificant investment of getting your game rated and through approvals is going to be worth your percentage of the streaming check to put your third-party game on Virtual Console? I'm not talking about, you know, people are going to go out and buy Mega Man 2 again, probably. People are going to go out, Resident Evil for GameCube pops up in their course. People are going to go play it. But what about stuff like this? Is this going to just not exist on the service and that's why we're getting it in compilations like this? Or is this just filling the gap right now because it's possible? Or do you think Nintendo will say, hey, it's our walled garden, ESRB, you know what, we're fine. You don't need to be in here, or what do you think is going to happen?
I can see a couple different options, and I can see them happening on top of each other. Right now we have the Arcade Archives series on the Switch eShop, where a lot of SNK games currently are there, Metal Slug and the like.
Love them.
Super Mario Brothers Versus continues to be one of the top 10 downloaded games ever since it came out on the eShop. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is kind of another answer to Virtual Console. And I think that if you combined the things, that could make sense. I feel like Nintendo would need to invest, and they would know that they need to pay a lot of licensing fees, pay the money. And I feel like they would be down to take a loss in certain ways in order to get people in. It's similar to Xbox with the Game Pass, where I really think that that could fundamentally change the industry if they commit hard enough.
Okay.
And I think Nintendo knows that as well, and they know that they have the secret sauce with their back catalog and library. So if they come up with some system where there's a set of games, you can borrow them or whatever, play them, but then also have the ability to buy them classic eShop style, I think that could solve that problem.
Now, what if... Okay, so I love classic eShop style, and I understand the real potential for streaming service as well. My question is going to be price differential. I mean, right now you look at something like Arcade Archives, what, $8 a piece? If I'm paying $20 a month to stream everything and $5 to buy a la carte if I have that option, which is what I'd like to have, is that going to undermine the niche market costs that we have around something like Arcade Archives or this?
I think it's a similar thing to the Xbox Game Pass, where it's like, why would somebody pay $60 for the game when they could pay $10 a month to play it?
But I'm worried we're going to end up in an app store situation where suddenly the value of the games plummets. And yes, we can say it's just an old ROM you've got to put up. But again, it is not free to put these games up. There are substantial costs for the emulation packaging, the rating, et cetera, the certification. You know, you've got stuff. Well, I don't know about cert costs, actually. But the others, there's a substantial cost to go in. Is that going to drive a lot of the kinds of games that we're able to sell a la carte out of the marketplace? Or do you think it'll work?
I definitely think that's a possibility. And I wouldn't be surprised if Nintendo's answer to eShop doesn't have all of the games. It is the classics. It is the Nintendo games. So a big focus on Nintendo-owned games or partnerships, like we've seen them do before with Sega.
Yeah.
A lot of Genesis titles and more obscure things.
Virtual Console was really good at this for a while, and then gradually as time went on, they dropped away from it, where they're just like, you know what, we really can put a lot of stuff up here. Mm-hmm. But then when they stopped putting everything out, I started to worry. The other part I wonder about, I don't want to stretch this conversation out forever, but another thing I wonder about is with the service, how much do you talked about, you don't know if everything will be available all the time. How do you keep it fresh? How do you keep it in the news? How do you keep discovery happening? Do you, you know, do you launch with five streaming games and then you add another four or five every week like they did with Virtual Console?
Yeah,
or do you
I
just dump 1,000 games? But if you do, then what brings people back?
Yeah. And I think that there is something to the Disney vault. Mm. It's a Disney vaultification of Nintendo games. I don't want that. But I think that it, I can totally see Nintendo doing a thing where it's Mario Month. And all the Mario games are available, but it's limited time. You got to play during this month or else you can't get it.
You gave me Yoshi's Island finally after decades of asking. If you take it away from me.
Yeah.
Not okay.
Yeah. And that is the worry. But maybe it's a thing that's kind of like PlayStation Plus, where if you download it, you have it.
Oh.
So you just need to get in at the time to make sure that
get you get in to grab it. So you keep you coming back
and then keep it cycling and then you keep, I don't know. It's, again, not the best thing for for users and what they want, but I can see that creating the kind of news cycle of having it matter of when things are on or off the
I have a new proposal. What if they just give us all the games? Just give them to us. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good plan.
I like that. Mr. You Nintendo, like that if you're listening, just give it to us.
Again, Nintendo does good stuff. I trust them. They make many, many decisions that delight me. But every now and then, they're also Nintendo.
And especially when it comes to their online services. And I think that there is a real reason to be concerned about them making the wrong calls with this.
Yeah.
But they've done such a good job with the Switch so far. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's hope this is good.
Yeah, I buy a lot of retro games on my Switch. I play a lot of Moon Patrol on that thing. It's a great way to play Moon Patrol. Fun fact. Moon Patrol's fun. You ever play Moon Patrol?
I've never played Moon
Patrol. It's one of the earliest examples of an endless runner. And it's really well done. It's an IRM game. It's actually kind of delightful. It has a cool little jaunty theme.
Big fan of jaunt.
Yeah.
Next news story, this comes from IGN. Fortnite is making a lot of money. I don't know if this is news, but the numbers the numbers are pretty interesting. Fortnite launched on iOS last month as an invite-only event, and after opening up to everyone on the platform this week, it's reported that the free-to-play mobile title has made over $15 million in less than a month.
This is a free game.
Free game.
Yeah.
Free to play. This is all microtransaction bullshit. According to market researcher Sensor Tower, since the monetization of the title on March 15th, players have spent over $15 million on in-app purchases. On the day the invite-only requirement was removed, the average daily spend increased threefold from $620,000 to over $1.8 million in a single day. Fortnite topped the iOS charts in 47 countries within 24 hours of its mobile launch and made 1 million in its first 3 days. Its popularity has grown so much that schools are concerned over distracted students playing the title during class. The mobile version has yet to make its way to Android, but no doubt we'll see another mammoth increase in revenue when it does.
Has yet to make its way to Android should be a tattoo on my body.
Yeah.
It's like, yep. Yeah. Second-class citizen over here.
And just imagine when it does, how much more these numbers are going to be.
Yeah, because Android games that you pay money for up front don't do well, but Android games where you're paying microtransactions, from what I understand, do better. Mm-hmm. So, oh, man. I mean, it's a good game, and well done.
And its mobile version, from the little we saw when we did the Gamescast, when I was playing, were you on that Gamescast with
me? Yeah, I was on that.
Blew my mind. I can't believe that a game, like a real game, can play that way on a mobile device. So
I especially like that they're willing to wall it off and let you be like, hey, I'm just playing with other mobile players here. If I were competing with console people there, I just like want to cry my eyes out. But as long as everybody's on a level playing field, yay. I love that. And they give you that clear signification that you can do that. So woohoo for that. Yeah,
good on you, Fortnite.
It's a neat game. And my understanding of the microtransaction model for this is that it's not particularly obtrusive. That's correct, right? Mm-hmm. This is mostly cosmetics.
Yeah.
And yeah. So
Andy.
Oh, summoning Andy.
Yeah.
I what if he like appeared like a mystical creature, like a genie or something?
He does that. You know, it's not that important.
You know, shouting away. Is anyone there?
It's fine. I don't need him. I don't need him.
No,
it's okay.
What were you
it's
summoning him for?
I just want to see if he cared about the monetization stuff, if he has paid anything,
and
how obtrusive it is, because he's the only one of us that plays this. The official list. Sorry.
That's
if I wanted to know.
You never get to do this. Games. You never get to do this. Oh, do you want to read it?
I do it all the time.
Oh,
I'll read it. The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday. It's coming at you right now. Out today. Oh, God. Enigmatis 3, The Shadow of Carkhalla.
Of course.
Coming to PS4 and Xbox One. Dead Ahead.
I want to be in the meeting where that was the final title choice.
Dead Ahead Zombie Warfare on Xbox One. What a great name. I'm down with that. Dead Ahead.
Yeah.
Rememoried on PS4. What the fuck, man?
I think we're reaching the place maybe with video games that cars eventually got to where they're like, you know, originally it's like the Dodge Charger, the Challenger, Falcon. And then like after they made cars for like nearly 100 years or so, they're like, you know, we're running out of words for a car. And suddenly instead of being like, you know, Falcon and Charger and it becomes like, and Cobra, it turns into like a Spire. You know, more and more nebulous concepts. It's just like, I'm the Ford Aspire now. I mean, what is an Aspire? Anyway. That's happening with video games.
It's time for Reader Mail. Sponsored by patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. If you do not support us, that's okay, because you can change that. You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. And for just $1, you get to watch Gamescast live. You get party mode early. You get Ask Kind of Funny Gamescast, anything. Exclusively. That never goes live to anyone else, so that's pretty damn cool. For a couple more dollars, you get to see the pre and post show of Gamescast, and that's always a damn fun time. Sometimes we go really long.
Oh, I love those.
Sometimes we don't.
Those are fun.
But those are always off the rails and insanity. So patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Every penny counts. We need a better, thing. Like, match your butter half to your bottom half.
Oh, wait, you mean like...
Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, we had to brainstorm that. Maybe we could ask them for one.
Let us know in the comments below what patreon.com/kindoffunnygames catchphrase should be. Question number one comes from Marcus Martins. Hey, Tim and Jared. The Nintendo Switch has been famous for being the home of old Neo Geo games. I've always enjoyed playing the Metal Slug series, but other than the fact that I don't have much experience with Neo Geo titles. Since Tim has a lot of Switch experience and Jared has a love for classic games, I was wondering if you guys could give me any Neo Geo game recommendations for the Switch.
We most certainly can. Once again, Neo Geo, the fabulous and ridiculously expensive console by SNK.
Mm-hmm.
Now circle. SNK Playmore. What's that?
I said it's full circle.
Yeah, it's come full circle around back. But these titles more from the 1990s and beyond. On Switch, three that I recommend that you check out. Last Blade, a spectacular fighting game. Even if you don't like fighting games, that might be worth checking out. It's one of the best. And Last Blade 2, its sequel, which I don't think is yet available on Switch, maybe even better. But both Last Blade games...
Why, even if you don't like fighting games, why do you think people would?
Well, one, weapon fighters have a different feel to them. And second, it's got that nice, almost Street Fighter-y vibe where it's instantly comprehensible.
Mm.
Neo Geo fighting games were four-button fighters. And some of them, I'm not a big King of Fighters guy. That world never really grabbed me. But Last Blade just has a nice flow. And even if you don't know what you're doing, you kind of quickly pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's a lot of nuance and you can get really, really, really good at it. Plus, it's a simple old style fighting game where there is no giant single player mode. You can just sit down and be like, I want to just fight all the fighters in the game now and go through and get better. And then I'm going to fight it through again. They're going to be tougher. And sometimes it's very rewarding. It's also a lavish, beautiful video game. But I like weapon fighters. You like weapon fighters?
I prefer just more hand-to-hand combat, maybe some fireballs. But
oh, okay. So you're not a Sammy Show guy?
Soul Calibur's cool, but just more fucking around, obviously, the GameCube version.
Okay. Let's go. Yeah, Soul Calibur, Sammy Show, I even Weapon Lord. Mm-hmm. I like weapon fighters. Waku Waku 7, the other end, also fighting a lot of fighting games on Neo Geo. Waku Waku 7 is a parodic fighting game, making fun of contemporary fighting games from the period.
Mm.
It has this is a game where you can play a Japanese elementary school child with a backpack riding on top of a giant Totoro fighting a tank.
I'm in.
It's delightful. The animation's great. It's actually a really well-designed fighting game and really fun. And it's legitimately funny and cute. It's available. It's also a game that's been very hard to get your hands on. It was available on Wii Virtual Console, I think in Japan only. And it was like a Saturn game for a while. And so nobody's ever played this thing. But it's a lot of fun and colorful and beautiful. So that's Waku Waku 7, which is one of the few examples of video game parody.
Is it actually the seventh game?
That's part of the joke. Like they're that. Just like, yeah, it's like, hey, fighting. It came out at a time when fighting games were dominating arcades.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an arcade game, and they're just like,
fuck it.
Yeah, they're just making fun of fighting games. But it's a good fighting game that That's makes cool. fun of fighting games. And the Magical Drop games, which are really good. If you like Puyo Puyo and Tetris, Magical Drop, those games are a legit good take on that. That's a little original and have their own very interesting mechanics and a high level of mastery. Ones I'm hoping will come to Switch, Top Hunter. Top Hunter is great. It's a side-scrolling, it's kind of halfway between a brawler and a shooter, side-scrolling type game. And so somewhere between Metal Slug and Double Dragon. Mm-hmm. I don't quite know how to get that right. It is lavish, beautiful, some of the best animation. Neo Geo had such incredible animation, but really neat, fun mechanics. In the Hunt, which is a shooter, like a side-scrolling shmup about submarines, which sounds awful and is beautiful. So I'm really hoping that comes. Twinkle Star Sprites, if that comes to Switch, I'm going just going to wet myself with joy. That's a competitive top-down shooter. So both sides of the screen, you and somebody else are both fighting enemies. And it's like when you play competitive puzzle games, when, you know, in Tetris, when you're playing against somebody, you send the blocks over yeah. Except you're playing the shooter. And as you do things, you're throwing more crap onto the other person's screen. Cool. So it's like bullet hell versus bullet hell. It's great.
That's awesome.
Twinkle Star Sprites, that's called. I'm hoping that'll come. And, of course, the king of Neo Geo games, which is available on your PlayStation and your Vita right now, Windjammers.
Windjammers, boys. Let's go.
Which is just as good as everyone says it is.
Dwight Rosa writes in and says, hi, Tim and Jared. If someone who doesn't play video games asks you for advice on a game that could turn them into gaming, what would you recommend? And would you focus more on what aspects? Story? Graphics? Greetings from Portugal. P.S. I would recommend Uncharted 4, probably.
What's your answer on this, Tim?
So I want to start by talking about Uncharted 4. Gia, not a gamer at all. Gia, watching me play Uncharted Lost Legacy, she sat down and wanted to see what was going on. Mm-hmm. That didn't mean she wanted to play, and it didn't mean she would be capable of playing. I don't think Uncharted 4 is the right, or Uncharted is even the right franchise to throw at them to play. To watch, to ease them in and get them interested, I think it is because it's so visually interesting, but...
When you say capable, you mean just like the dual controls, analog control stuff?
Yeah, that concept is so beyond somebody that doesn't play.
So the learning curve, the jump, you figure she just wouldn't want to put up with the long
and it's just, you just need, I feel like there's like an education process where you have to kind of work your way up. So because of that, I think something much, much simpler. I think that Pokemon is an excellent entrance into video games because it's slow paced and simple enough. And especially if you do one of the older games, the controls are so simple that you kind of just eventually teach yourself. And it is just a lot of like reading and stuff. And there's a engrossing story and you can go through, but it's still, you know, Colin always used to say baby's first RPG. And I feel that is apt in some ways and you can make it a lot deeper if you need it to. But I think that Pokemon's a good entry to people.
I like that a lot. The first place I went was storytelling games with simple interfaces. And for the same reason, you don't want somebody to have to master complete, because I heard someone say once, it's only two sticks and eight buttons. That's a ridiculous statement for anyone who doesn't play video games. That's 10 things to keep in your head at one time. The only reason any of us know how to do this is we have dedicated dozens of hours of our lives to learning the language of this particular control interface. And it is a serious buffer. I think that we sometimes do ourselves a disservice by treating that as an easy point. So I love what you said about the fact that that's a real curve for folks. So I'd go the other way. Some of the stuff that Annapurna publishes, Florence comes to mind immediately. You can play it in 45 minutes. It's a universal message. It has interesting mechanics that speak to the story. Mm-hmm. Beautiful music. It's about something all of us can understand. I love that. And likewise, Walking Sims for the same reason. Edith Finch, frankly, I think would be a great gateway. Gone Home. I think is not a bad entrance to that
See,
world.
The problem with that is what I was saying earlier about the dual analog control. Gia, one of the games that she was interested in playing was Walking Dead, the Telltale games.
Yeah.
And even that, like, she had a really hard time with.
Well, those quick time events in those, especially. I mean, you're fine.
Oh, that too. Having to figure out. It was a nightmare.
Trying to figure out which way to go. That's very
And when you don't know what triangle is, it's like, that's Hard.
Angie and I played that together through, I think, on a PC, and we were using a controller, and she wasn't especially used to an Xbox controller, which I think was what we had plugged into the PC at that point. And that did take over. But Angie's good at games. She just tends to play different kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it took her a little bit, but she did wonderful with it. And actually, if you are interested in bringing somebody into dual sticks, a really good proving ground for that, which would kind of took her from not being comfortable moving around 3D space to being comfortable with it, was Portal. Because Portal, until you're in the much later levels, allows you to keep trying over and over, and there's nothing trying to kill you mm-hmm. during that process. So she could take her time learning the controls, and since you're learning the mechanics in Portal anyway, because the guns aren't the same kind of guns you're using in every other game, and it assumes nothing, it does a very good job of teaching her to play. So, you know, by the time we got to the end of that game, she's bouncing from thing to thing and taking care of machine gunning droids, and yeah. but because the game has taught her very well. It's a very well put together game that way.
Another answer I have is Mario Kart, especially Ooh. Mario Kart 8. I think that the game does a very good job of not making people feel bad, even if they're not good. And you don't need to use the weapons. You don't need to use the yeah. items. You can just hold A to go and control. And I feel like people can understand cars. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Totally.
Like that, like racing games are simple enough, at least at their base level,
yeah,
to wrap your head around, even if you don't play video games.
Yeah, it's a common metaphor. Look at that. Oxenfree comes to mind. Mm. Side-scrolling, storytelling-oriented, no rush, universally appealing, easy to understand what you're supposed to do at any given moment. Desert golfing, man. I keep going back to it. But desert golfing is on your phone. It's $2, and it's instantly comprehensible and really addictive. And I guess last look, yeah, maybe Papers, Please comes to mind.
Mm, yeah, that's a good one.
I think Papers,
I feel like there's a lot of mobile games that are kind of fun gateway drugs, and some people just go way too into, like Gia in Disney Emoji Blitz.
Well, you know,
she will not stop playing.
I talked
upsetting.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I talked about desert golfing. I'm almost a hole 500 now. I had a guy, I talked about this a while ago. I've been playing fairly regularly. Somebody sent me a tweet this morning, said, "What have you done?" They're at 2000 and they started when I did.
Oh,
so,
man.
It's like, whoops.
That's how it goes. Next question comes from Sean Sweeney. He says, "Dear Tim and Reverend Jared, what is Nintendo's plan for all the following video games that are supposedly coming out second half of this year? Fire Emblem Switch, Yoshi, Pokemon Switch, hopefully 2018, according to their January shareholders meeting, and Smash Brothers, and whatever Retro Studios is working on the last 3 or 4 years. My question is, can they fit all those big first-party titles in just an E3 presentation and go into detail for each one and reveal any, if not all, third-party title announcements, or is another Nintendo Direct going to come prior to the E3? I know Pokemon usually has its own Direct, but what about Fire Emblem? That had its own Direct early last year as well. Please, Tim, tell me you've been hearing rumors in your dark web searches. Thank you, guys." I think that the easy answer is that Nintendo's not going to show all of it at E3. Mm-hmm. Nintendo is going to have multiple directs this year, some focusing on just one title and some focusing on a franchise and some focusing on a bunch of different things. We've seen over the last 2 years them develop their different avenues for getting marketing out there, whether it's a direct mini, an indies showcase, a Nintendo presentation. Like, they have different names for different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll see a lot of these games at E3. If Pokemon's 2018, all signs are pointing to it being announced before E3.
Mm-hmm.
It would probably be in its own Pokemon Direct. And then we'll get some info on that. And there's been a lot of rumors in the dark web stuff you're talking about I think it was Bandai Namco talking about releasing a new line of Pokemon toys, and that would reveal a new character, which means there's another generation coming, and that's going to happen sometime in April or May. So if Pokemon is 2018, I think we're going to hear about it very soon.
Do you really think Pokemon's 2018?
I think that there is a chance. I think yeah. that there's a real chance. Nintendo's crazy right now. Mm-hmm. And with what they're doing, they're quiet about a lot of things. And I think there's a really good chance that Pokemon is 2018. I also think there's a chance Animal Crossing's 2018.
Yeah, Animal Crossing, I think, could sneak up on us very quickly.
Some leaked images came out yesterday. I don't know if you saw for Animal Crossing.
No, I didn't actually.
Of a website with just a bunch of placeholders. It's like, placeholder video goes here, placeholder image goes here. And it's like, obviously, like, okay, they're prepping something.
Well, Animal Crossing does, like, this is the right time to do it, I think. That's the kind of, like, that's a get together with your friends kind of game. It's the right time to announce it. But when it comes to Pokemon, if it was going to be this year, and I don't know if it is or not, I wonder if that's not a spring game, but if it is this winter, that's one of the very few games that I think wouldn't be eaten by Red Dead.
Mm. Oh, totally.
Because it's a different audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some overlap, but people that play Red Dead are also going to play Pokemon. It's got an installed base that's going to pay attention even in the shadow of that massive game that's coming. So, and if Nintendo did like a late November, early December release for Pokemon, that could work, I think. Or even a late October release could work for Pokemon. It's one of the only games that could do that. And it's not a matter of like, well, one's big and another's big. It's just that Pokemon has that baked in audience. Mm-hmm. And Red Dead is something that absolutely everyone's going to play.
Yeah. And Pokemon also has legs. Like, even it will keep selling month after month after month.
Yes, it's evergreen. Exactly. Yeah. But I think it does make sense to get it out for Christmas if you're going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a kid's game.
Oh, totally. Yeah. If we get Pokemon, I imagine it will be before Black Friday. Mm-hmm. Like, it will not be after
October,
that.
Maybe?
October, I can even see September.
Really?
No, because the online services and Smash and all that, like, I don't know. Like, the second half is getting interesting. I can't believe Yoshi's second half. Like, I would have sworn Yoshi would have been an April game.
There's a part of me that wonders if Pokemon doesn't wait to 2019 to be their big push.
Pokemon is such an interesting game for the Switch because I just don't. It can do anything. It could be 2018. It could be 2019. No matter what they do, it's going to sell insane numbers.
Yeah.
But the question is it Gen 8? Is it a remake? If it's a remake, is it a remake of Diamond and Pearl, or is it another Red and Blue remake, or is it a sequel to Red and Blue? Like, there's so many things up in the air, and we'll find out soon enough. Yeah. But yeah, Pokemon, there is a lot of signs pointing to 2018, but there's also a lot of doubt.
Okay, so how about this? Switch is all about the snap, right? Mm-hmm. You gotta do the snap. Mm-hmm. So I'm predicting Pokemon Snap 2, right there.
Yeah, not happening.
Yeah.
I want to segue into another question because you brought some interesting things up. This comes from Matthew Anderson. What is up with this obsession with Red Dead? I know it was critically acclaimed and all when it came out, but it's not like it was selling like crazy. Grand Theft Auto 5 sold 20.67 million on PS3, while Red Dead only sold 6.57. Everyone keeps saying no way you want to go up against Red Dead come October and the weeks following, but I do not see why people are thinking that way. Red Dead's not Grand Theft Auto, and I really think people are blowing this game way out of proportion. I think it will sell well, but I do not think it will sell so well that no other games will be bought at this time. I just want to know what all you're thinking is when you hear you say, don't pit yourself against Red Dead if you want to have good sales. I don't think it's anywhere near the appeal of Grand Theft Auto since it's not as relatable due to it taking place in a different time period. There's so many other franchises that always sell better than Red Dead. Halo, Mario, Zelda, Grand Theft Auto, and yet people release games on the same dates as some of those games. So why is it that developers should be scared of a game that has not proven itself in sales as much as some of the aforementioned franchises I listed?
It's an insightful question. My answer is fairly simple. I disagree with one fundamental statement that you said in this, which is that Red Dead is not Grand Theft Auto. When Red Dead came out, it was not Grand Theft Auto, but now it is. This is their other pillar, and they have clearly positioned it as that. Rockstar has not released a major game since Grand Theft Auto V in 2013. It is 5 years later. There is no GTA 6 buzz at all, no hints. There's simply Grand Theft Auto Online, a very interesting game that's still doing well, and there's this. This is their game. This is Grand Theft Auto now. It doesn't replace it, but it supplements it. It is built on the same kind of model. It is the same kind of world. Honestly, it's, in my opinion, an even more compelling version of that open world storytelling experience. It will have, unless I'm very wrong, the same kind of fascinating online elements, probably refined further since they've had several years of experience to figure out how to make that work. When that game came out on PS3, it was a fascinating, superbly created curio that did probably even better than most of us expected, but that they obviously had great faith in. Now, they have made it abundantly clear this is their baby. And they believe in it, and it is what they're talking about. In my opinion, this is Rockstar's, you know, winter, Rockstar's magnum opus for the decade. Your thoughts?
I'm kind of in between on it. I do think the Red Dead's going to dominate, and that if games are going up against it, they're going to suffer, as we've seen before with things like Shadow of the Tomb Raider, where it's like when you are going up against other games in a time when things are busy, your titles tend to not do as well. We saw with Titanfall and Call of Duty eating into each other's sales and Battlefield and all of that stuff. I don't think that Red Dead is Grand Theft Auto. I think it is one of the only franchises that can be close. But I think Red Dead 2 needs to prove that. Because we haven't seen much from the franchise, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Grand Theft Auto, it wasn't until Grand Theft Auto 3 that the franchise became what we think of it as now, right?
Yep.
And so I think that Red Dead 2 could be that moment for the series. But I think that Grand Theft Auto is totally in a league of its own, where it has a mainstream appeal that I don't think Red Dead will ever have.
And there I honestly disagree with you.
Because I feel like if I walked up to somebody that doesn't play video games and I mentioned Grand Theft Auto, they'd know it. If I mentioned Red Dead Redemption, they'd have no idea.
But I think in December they will.
Hmm.
That is the difference. I really do think that I'm not a prophet, but I think that they are doing absolutely everything they can in the way they've approached this to make us understand that that is what's happening here. This is going to be the other leg that company stands on, and it's going to be out. There's going to be an online for years, and there's going to be a tremendous cultural relevance to it, and it's going to be this thing we've never seen before that just blows us out of our shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And again, maybe that's the hype train speaking, but they've given me so much reason to have faith.
Yeah.
And what they can create. And they've spent so much time on this and been so patient with it that it's really hard for me to believe that it's going to be anything but that. It also doesn't hurt that there are more copies. This is a scientific fact. There are more copies of Grand Theft Auto on Earth than there are people. I don't know if you knew that. There are 8 billion people on the planet Earth, and there are 26 billion copies of Grand Theft Auto 5 sold. Do you know that?
No, there you go. Okay. Yeah. You're making the jokes.
That's humor.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, wait, what are you talking about? No. Yeah. No,
And this is I think that they understand they have the potential to leverage that here as well. If anything, I think that Red Dead 2 may be able to have an even broader appeal than Grand Theft Auto eventually does.
I don't know, man. I know this game is going to sell super well, and compared to pretty much any other developer or publisher, Rockstar knows what it's doing and how to make fucking money. But having said that, I just don't think that Red Dead has half the resonance of Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto I can't even put it into words. Few franchises that are on that level.
Oh, I agree. Let me put it this way. Okay, because people can, you know, I'm sure somebody's going to pull out the insane thing I said about what would happen if Half-Life 3 came out, where I was probably overestimating copies sold. But if I had come to you, I played Grand Theft Auto 1 on my PC.
Mm-hmm.
If I had come to you at the beginning of the PS2 era and a year in said, by the way, this game about being a crook in an open New York where you drive around and hijack people's cars and do crimes is going to become the thing that makes the PS2 a must-have system. And then it's going to transcend that and create the most powerful video game franchise of the modern era. You'd have looked at me like I was crazy.
Totally.
Right now, we have more reason to believe that this is going to be a success than we ever had for that.
Yeah.
And it is set up better than anything possibly could for that. I honest to God think this thing's going to blow up like a megaton.
We'll see. We'll see. I want to, at some point, we should take bets on how much Red Dead 2 is going to sell. Because I feel like that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's time to squad up. Callum Hurley writes in. His PSN name is Big Boss 22123. He says, looking to play PSVR games with some best friends, Farpoint, Wipeout, maybe others. The online community for those games seems rather empty, but there must be someone else wanting to play these games. If you want to play games with my boy, Callum Hurley, go hit him up. Big Boss 22123 on PSN. Now it's time for You Wrong. You can go to kindofwrong.com/you wrong. Let us know what we got wrong during the show.
What did we get wrong?
Yeah.
I don't have any salt today. I decided, I've thought about the salt thing and realized I should only be salty when I'm sincerely salty.
Yeah, no, you can't force the salt.
Can't force the salt. Today I'm feeling sugary sweet.
Kebab says, Greg only uses the singular possessive bit on PS I Love You when it was called Roper's Report rather than the Roper Report.
My bad. Here we go. What else we got here?
Ear Gamer says, according to an IGN article I read, here's why Michael Ironside was recast for Splinter Cell Blacklist. With Blacklist's focus on agile forward movement, Ubisoft needed an actor capable of motion capture and performance. Consequently, the 62-year-old Ironside is out, and the 32-year-old Eric Johnson, known for his role as Whitney Fordman on Smallville, is the new Sam Fisher.
Oh, whatever. That never stopped Liam Neeson.
Gunsmoke was made by Capcom.
Oh, there we go. It's a Capcom game. Gamer. All right. Was it developed by Capcom or was it released by Capcom? Although at that time, SNK published its own stuff. So I mean, probably developed internally at Capcom or by a contractor.
Luker Wolf says, fuel for the fire regarding Pokemon Switch. Maybe in 2018, a brand new Pokemon, fictional creature, not necessarily game, is being officially revealed on April 9th alongside new information for the next film. So that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Like that. Let's see. That's Monday. Let's go. Get hype, boys. And then finally, Kebab says, to counter the Red Dead sales numbers argument, GTA 5 got a major boost thanks to the PS4 and Xbox One release, as well as the GTA Online support continued to stay while Red Dead did not. That's true.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
All kinds of fun stuff happening.
All types of fun stuff. All next Monday, me and Greg, the return of Greg Miller.
The return?
On Kind of Funny Games
Holy
Daily.
Cow.
Get hype, son. Until then, have a good weekend. I love you.